What did you do upon progression after having this great response? And are there any situations, you know, this is a big debate, particularly in colon cancer, there's even a trial looking at continuing Bev on progression and changing the chemo. Any situations where you ever do that? And what was her next therapy?
Well, that's a good question. And we're actually investigating that in an ovarian trial right now as well. In cervix cancer, you know, what we will typically do and what we do with her is we basically kind of keep her on this until intolerance. And I think in this case, we kept her on bevacizumab, but she developed some problems with it, and then we had to take her off. There was a period of time where she was just being observed. When she recurred, I think my first kind of step was to go back to a platinum combo with something different than with paclitaxel. So I used the gemcitabine cisplatinum regimen that I had mentioned before for cervix cancer. And, you know, it worked a little bit, I would say. I mean, we went through one assessment cycle without progression, but then it looked like it had progressed through, and then we put her into a phase one program.
Interesting. You mentioned that she had some kind of problem with Bev. What was the problem, and what kinds of problems do you see in general in these patients?
Well, in general, for cervix cancer patients, you know, most of these we see with recurrent disease have had radiation, so we see complications from that frequently. In this particular situation, it wasn't that. We were running into problems with proteinuria. Actually, I tried to dose reduce the Bev, actually, because I do think there's a dose response to some of the side effects that we see, certainly with hypertension and with the proteinuria. But, you know, it was kind of one of those things. She was kind of getting worn out just from the chemotherapy exposure. This was kind of an additional annoyance. And that kind of just led to us to finally say, listen, I don't know how much benefit we're getting out of this. We've done it for several cycles. And then that's how we kind of came to the decision to stop.
That's interesting. Did she have hypertension also?
Yeah, but it wasn't something that was unmanageable. She was on a single drug.
It's interesting. You don't hear too many patients with significant proteinuria on Bev in any cancer, although occasionally you've heard about people even going into the nephrotic range, and you get into this question of, you know, well, now they're benefiting from treatment, but how big a deal is it to be nephrotic? How bad was her proteinuria?
Well, like I said, it was more of an annoyance. So I wouldn't say it was the thing that was dose limiting. It's just that it was, you know, in the constellation of the symptoms and the treatment course and all that, we just decided to take a break.
What about bowel perforation? And as long as I'm bringing it up, bowel perforation also with ovarian.
Actually, in cervix cancer, what we see even probably more so is fistula. So, you know, they're already at risk because of the poor vascularity, and we do see that. And I've seen several cases where they've developed fistula on Bev on 240-like regimens, and then we've stopped the Bev and the fistula is actually healed, or at least got to be less of a nuisance. The bowel perforation risk across the GYN spectrum is still coming in around 2 to 4% when it's done in the right patients. I think we learned early on that, you know, women with inflammatory bowel disease and those that have bowel obstruction are terrible candidates for the drug, and I absolutely don't use it in those situations. So I think the more selective that we've become, the lower the rate of the adverse event.